Hello and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. Once again, my name is Doobie and I am your host for the next 5 days and four glorious nights. And with me today are Fanboy.
Hello.
Captain.
I was trying to come up with something witty, but you went to me first. I didn't have time.
With me today are Rebecca.
Hello.
Captain John.
Oh, hey there, mateys.
And Fanboy.
Hola.
That's the best you could do.
Should I try again later?
Yeah, please do.
Before we get started, I want to remind you should know this part by heart by now. Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Podcast at laughingplace.com, toll free, 866-718-9408. Let us know what you think. Give us your opinions. We've got some fun in store today. Just a little bit of news and a lot of us sitting around talking about our favorites. So let's get started with that little bit of news. There's some breaking news. Breaking news. What about the tele?
No, it's rattling.
All right, anyway, just before...
You've got mail.
Oh, yeah, that's what you need.
Just before we came on the air today, or to be more technically correct, just before we started recording today, we heard that there has been an announcement on who will be taking over Alfredo's at the Epcot Pavilion at Walt Disney World. As has been talked about before, Alfredo's will be closing on, what, July 31st or August 31st?
August 31st.
August 31st. Well, we'll be closing... We thought would be closing on August 31st, but what's actually going to be happening is the Patina Group.
Yes, my favorite Michael Eisner-supported restaurant group.
Will be taking over management, and they will run it. It'll still be Alfredo's.
Well, it won't be Alfredo's, because that's their brand. It will be operate. I don't know what the name will be, but it'll be the same as Alfredo's.
Good point. Alfredo's is owned by Alfredo's, I presume.
Yeah, they let them keep their name now as part of the operating participant contract at Walt Disney World.
And then in the fall of next year, 2008, will be a new restaurant, I presume, in that location. They're not going to open up a second location.
Yeah, I would guess so. Yeah. Although I hear there's a big empty show building in Japan for Meet the World. They could do a big tunnel.
That would be a great place for Italian food.
Okay, that's just silly.
So anyway, that was the breaking news.
Yes, it is.
And that's exciting that Alfredo's, at least the location, will not be closing, at least not right now. So I guess all those reservations we made for that very last day aren't nearly as valuable anymore, are they?
Well, although it'll be interesting to see, you know, I mean, because I always think about the cast members. If they will, like, are they just going to stay on and, like, have when the next day have a new employer? Because there's no way that paycheck's going to be accurate.
But it'll come on Tuesday.
Or Thursday. That, you know, I mean, I know that Epcot, every paycheck comes on Thursday acronym works if it was like Wednesday. Epcot.
It would have been much better. Much easier for me. Anyway, so that's exciting because it involves food, so we're happy.
Now, to give you, those of you who haven't been to Downtown Disney in California, a little bit of background. The Patina Group operates several restaurants there. They operate the Catal restaurant, and then also Naples and the little side grab-and-go Napolini.
And the Uva Bar and Tortilla Joe's.
Oh, I forgot about Tortilla Joe's.
And the Uva Bar.
And the restaurants at the Walt Disney Concert Hall.
Right, I knew that, and then they also are responsible for food at the Hollywood Bowl as well. I know that group operates there.
So they do
around.
Great hot dogs.
Yeah.
No, better than that. So, the picnic baskets that you get.
If I'm not mistaken, they did not operate Yoriba. And then when they at Downtown Disney in California, and then once they closed, they did open Tortilla Joe's. So they've expanded there.
They seem. I mean, I get the impression that they must be pretty happy with the relationship that they have with the Disney theme parks. So that must do well for them.
I certainly read good things about them on the boards and such about their various restaurants, and we've been there for that matter. We love some of their.
Oh, every meal we had was just really tasty, really good.
So, and now with them coming, I believe this is their first location here at Disney World, and you wonder maybe if they're going to start to do some expansion this way with Downtown Disney or the Boardwalk or maybe even other World Showcase restaurants. Who knows?
It'd be nice. The one thing that's kind of, for me, a little bit of a sad note is that before it was an operating participant that had a deep Italian history there at the pavilion. And now you don't have that type of situation.
Right.
To be honest with you, but I can't remember what the gentleman who heads the group, Joaquim Splickel. I don't know exactly what his background is, so I can't speak too much to it. But so there was that kind of reading about it kind of, you know, left me a little sad in that way. But I was glad to see that we weren't going to get something that was very Americanized meal, even like a Buca di Beppo or something. You know, I was kind of scared where it was going to go.
Fanboy, I know, you know, even though a lot of people don't realize it, including myself till recently, a lot of the World Showcase restaurants are outsourced, for lack of a better word. the Mexico Pavilion is run by a company from Mexico, correct?
Correct.
Do you know about the others, if those are...
I believe Morocco is run by a Moroccan-based company. And, I mean, probably the same way in that it's... They're a United States entity that's a spinoff of Moroccan entity. And then I'm trying to think...
China?
I don't know about China. That's a very good question. You know, let me see if I can research that and get back to you at the end of the podcast.
What about the others? I don't even know which. Is Norway Disney?
Norway's Disney. Okay. That's how they're able to have the character dining.
Le Cellier?
Le Cellier is Disney. I think those you hit on the outsourced ones. Oh, okay. Chef de France is run by a French company.
Okay, so if indeed China is run by a Chinese company, which, you know, may not be likely considering China, but if it is, that actually makes this a bit of a bigger deal.
Mm-hmm.
Considering how authentic the World Showcase tries to be, so
yeah, and I think that was the news that hurt me. I mean, I admit at first I didn't like the Patina Group restaurants when they opened at Disneyland. I didn't feel that they were reaching a decent quality in guest service or food quality. But I've worn up to them. They've done a lot of outreach trying to really listen to their guests and make them better. So I have no qualms with them anymore. But it's sad that it's not, you know, an Italian place trying to open up their one little Disney branch. I think that's what was neat about Alfredo's, is it was Alfredo's. And, I mean, I know there's questions about how good they were, but Patina Group just doesn't have the same kind of magic. And speaking of Nine Dragons, I just found out that the restaurant will be closed this summer for refurbishment, which I find interesting in that I just found out about it. Usually they like to make these things out so people can not make their reservations. But their quick service just reopened.
Yeah, the Lotus Blossom
Cafe, something like that.
And they opened up a new cart there as well.
Joy of Tea.
The Joy of Tea.
And the work that they did on the cafe is beautiful.
It's beautiful. They've got those nice digital signs.
Uh-huh.
And,
the menus are presented in a digital format, big screen, so they're able to kind of alternate through images of the food and then descriptions of the food. And then the outdoor dining area is more enclosed now. It's not quite as open to the outside, so it's a little bit more temperate in climate. It's not as impressed by that. And they have the colors. It's a more richly colored location. It's much more inviting.
Yeah, so I wonder what they're going to be doing to the main place. Maybe.
And it's closed from July to November, so it's a...
Oh, wow, that's lengthy.
Refurb.
You know what's interesting about Nine Dragons? Growing up,
oh, uh-huh.
I would always buy those unofficial guides to Walt Disney World,
yep.
Just because I like that kind of thing. And they would always mention how Nine Dragons was terrible.
Yeah.
So, you know, the gang and I were in the park, and we needed some place to eat. I think it was pouring down rain, and it was really busy. It was candlelight time, so it was during the holidays. So we're like, okay, we'll go to Nine Dragons. And it was really good. And the that's surprising, because for years all of us had read in the unofficial guide that the place was terrible.
Yeah,
has an unofficial guide in his hands right now.
We never went, but I will tell you, I ordered a dish that's called like spicy beef or something like that. And I've grown up Thai restaurants, Indian restaurants. You know, I've grown up with spice. And the server warned me. He said it's very spicy, and I'm like, no, that's okay, because I was soaking wet from the rain, so it's kind of like, well, it'll warm me up. That'll be good. I have never had anything so spicy. I was sweating from the heat of this. And, in fact, I brought home some of the leftovers to share with my sister, who tends to like spicier stuff than I do. And she said she took two bites of it, and she had to get rid of it. She couldn't eat it. It was real. I've never encountered anything quite so spicy.
Well,
but it was good.
Is that a good thing?
No, yeah, I liked it. It was just, I just wish I would have had a few pots of rice to go with it to help with the spice.
And to illustrate what Fanboy was talking about, we went deep into the archives and got out our 1999 edition of the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World, published by Bob Schlesinger. Schlesinger. Whoops. Bob Schlesinger.
Schlesinger's the poo people.
The who?
The poo people.
Oh, see, I was thinking, Doc, you know, that
1-800-DRLA-URA.
1-800-DRLA-URA.
Because, you know, Doobie does the talk radio thing.
Oh, Dr. Laura.
My secret's out. Anyway, the summary on Nine Dragons. This should be one of the best Chinese restaurants in the United States, but it's not. The lack of a creative menu, along with assembly line preparation and service, makes Nine Dragons a lost opportunity at best and an overpriced tourist trap at worst. Well, don't listen to the 1999 official guide.
I'm curious. What do they say about Alfredo's?
In fairness, we haven't read their most recent edition, so they may have...
Actually, I think I have looked more recently, and they do mention how they've heard that things have gotten better or something along
They've heard,
those lines.
But they haven't tried themselves.
It's something along those lines.
They're still afraid.
Well,
anyway.
I guess we'll have to wait and see if we still feel the same way after this next refurbishment.
Touché.
We'll have to go back, try the kitchen.
The original Alfredo di Roma Ristorante got the same rating as Nine Dragons, 2.5 stars.
Wow, and we know that's good.
My understanding is that it's among the World Showcase pavilions. It does not score particularly well with guests. I'd heard previously. My understanding was portion sizes and...
Wait, which
and
one being this
Alfredo's,
one?
Okay. Alfredo's. And I think just the difference in the palate between American, Italian, and the... you know, Italian dishes that were served there.
Right.
So, but my understanding is the biggest issue was portion size. People were displeased with the size of the dishes. But I heard that from a cast member a few years back. So, you know, I wasn't like an official publication.
Are we eating after this, honey?
I'm making pizza.
Making pizza.
Yay.
So, Alfredo style.
Or is it Patina style?
It's Rebecca style.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
That is my favorite style.
You should open up a restaurant.
No, I shouldn't.
We basically got one. With one regular customer.
Exactly.
Yes. Yummy. Right.
We're going to move on to the fun part of our podcast. Not that the last 10 or so minutes weren't fun. Don't get me wrong, but...
I could resist.
Sailing on thin ice over there, Captain.
What was sailing? That was
sailing on thin ice.
See, he appreciated it, and you're over there making fun of me.
See, if he could work in my
you can't
piratical nature.
You haven't heard of ice sailing?
No.
And sailing through thin ice?
Wait,
you know, you break
ye
through.
Of X Games experience has not heard of ice sailing?
I didn't do Winter X Games. We're saving that for Mineral King.
Anyway, as you were saying.
Windows on Main Street. Last week, we mentioned that we were going to talk about Windows on Main Street this week at Disneyland because of the window that Roger Brogy received a couple of weeks ago. So we asked for some input, and we got some input. Thank you very much. So we're going to read some of that and talk about some of our own feelings on who now or in the future should have a window on Disneyland's Main Street. First, I'm going to read from Kimber, who posted on our boards, someone that I know and agree. She says that Alice Davis should be the next window, and there's a perfect space right next to Mark's. Her work in costuming and contributions to the theme parks and to the experience are well worth such an honor, aside from the fact that she's become a wonderful ambassador for the golden age of Imagineering.
The 80s.
What
hey,
do they do
Star Tours?
Splash Mountain?
Splash Mountain.
Captain EO.
They start work on Indiana Jones, Disney MGM Studio, Pleasure Island, Typhoon Lagoon, Disneyland Paris.
Disneyland Paris?
Well, at that time called Euro Disneyland, SCA.
Alice Davis, Rebecca, what do you think?
I think that Kimber raises an excellent point. I know that it's been a popular topic for quite a while within the Disney fan base, especially given the environment at the time. That Alice was there at Imagineering. We think of it as a pretty male-dominated area. You think about the footage on TV. It's mostly guys that you see, in the Disneyland specials. Well, yes, I know. So to have her receive that honor, and like Kimber pointed out, there is a space just so appropriately right beside her husband, Mark, there on Main Street. It just makes too much sense to let it pass by. So I hope that it happens. And me, I'd love to see these things. The names that we're about to discuss, those that are still here, I'd love to see them receive the honor before they pass away.
Yeah. Like the next one.
The next one we're going to read, a couple of people wrote this in. Super Josiah?
Yep, that's what I'd read it as.
That's a cool name. Eisner, love him or hate him, he did a lot for Disney. And that was followed up by our good friend from the UK, Dave Wesbaloo, who said, both of these are very good call. Eisner has a window in Disneyland Paris, and I would actually be keen to give Tony Baxter a window at Disneyland. He has one at Disneyland Paris. But considering his career started selling ice cream at Disneyland, and we all know what he has added, it would be very fitting. And I especially like to read that one because I love the word keen, and being able to say that on the podcast makes me happy.
That's really swell.
So about Michael Eisner, if there is a more controversial figure in the world of Disney, his last name starts with Pressler, but after him, Michael Eisner, good or bad, what do you guys think? Michael Eisner deserve a window on Main Street?
Yes.
Yes, he does. I mean, I know that his later years were not well received, but if you have to look at the totality of...
I definitely agree with that, yeah.
I agree, too, especially when you consider that Frank Wells has one for the work that he did with the company up until...
He has a window on Main Street?
Yeah, Seven Summits. Yeah.
Oh, you're right.
Over the bank. I know, I have a website on Windows on Main Street. That was my very first website. It was Disneyland's Windows on Main Street.
Oh, that's good. And he's double-dipping, though.
Yeah, because he has that amazing...
Homage
to his mountain climbing experiences at the top of the Matterhorn. Wells Expedition. Yeah, and so considering that Frank Wells has a window and Michael Eisner was right along as was his boss for all that time, despite what may have happened in the last 10 years, for all he did for Disney in the golden age that fanboy mentioned earlier, I would agree with that.
84 to 94.
But I think it's fair to let some time pass and let some of the other names that we've brought up already whose history with the company is, you know, a deeper and further and more enriching in general.
And in fairness, Michael got something that is named for him that is very appropriate. Team Disney.
Didn't they also name it a place at the Disney Studios for him?
Team Disney.
There? Oh, that's the Disney one. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. For some reason, you say Team Disney, I think Anaheim.
And Meisner's at Grand Floridian.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Meisner, yes.
And when I heard this question, the two names that immediately come to my mind, at least from the classic era, are Bob Gurr.
Oh, of course.
Who is known for creating anything on wheels at Disneyland, especially the Autopia. He created the Omni Mover. He created all the Main Street vehicles, which fanboys are especially partial to. So, and honestly, I think of all the people that don't have a window right now, he's the one that puzzles me the most because I think his contribution is clear. It goes back to almost to the very beginning of the park. He's been retired for quite a while, so it's not an issue of is he still working for the company or not. And it truly baffles me why Bob Gurr doesn't have a window.
And he's such a public figure for Disney. I mean, he's at fan conventions and at Disney events that they have for collectors and whatever. And he's just got such a positive
outlook. He's even a Disney legend. I mean, it's not like the company doesn't know who he is. They named him a Disney legend. So that does baffle me. And then the other name that comes to my mind is someone who you don't know my story, but given my early days at Disneyland and how I met my wife and the important part he played in our life and, who know, millions of other people's lives for his 30-plus years on Main Street is Rod Miller. He deserves it. I mean, he's a fixture. People know that person. They'd come to Disneyland when they were 5, and they'd come back when they were 25, and he was still there, and they'd remember him, and he would pretend like he remembered them. And
he was so good at that.
He was really good at that.
Saying hello to you in a way that you just felt like he knew you. And in some cases he did, but in other cases it was just the way that he was able to greet you.
And he's only retired, you know, relatively recently, mm-hmm. but I do hope Disneyland remembers Rod's contribution and gives him a window. There aren't all that many people who were on stage cast members. Wally Bogue and the other people at the Golden Horseshoe, Bob Penfield, who was the last remaining member of Club 55, the original cast members.
And all the cast members that got their window.
Yeah, I mean, that's important. But as far as individuals go, there are very few on stage cast members who get a window, but I can't think of anyone else more deserving than Rod Miller.
I would agree. I would agree with you. I'd love to see that. I know the first name that popped into my mind, actually it's two names, are the Sherman Brothers. They brought us There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow with the Carousel of Progress, It's a Small World. And I know that their music is also heard along Main Street in the medley and mm-hmm. such. So to me, the Sherman Brothers, I know that predominantly their work was, you know, within films, but they also had their element there at the theme park. And without the films, you wouldn't have, you know, I know I understand it's a broad thing, but I'm kind of keen on that, and to use keen again. And and the other name, also it's funny, it's in the world of music, is Don Dorsey. And that's just because I'm such a fan of the work that he did with nighttime entertainment, with parades. I remember watching... Oh, I'm pretty sure. Now I say that I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was Mulan, where he hadn't worked specifically with Disney for quite a while. By the time the whatever parade it was came along, and he was walking down Main Street, and that's when I learned that he was part of the he was like the head for the development of the zone concept within Disney Entertainment and Disney parades. And so he was walking that first night to make sure that the music for the parade was coming within the proper sequence.
Right. We talked to him. I think we talked to him at California Adventures opening. We actually.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And saw him doing the same
thing
there.
He was walking their performance corridor.
And he said that whenever they start a new parade, yep. he comes out to make sure the zone system is still. And it's just amazing when you think about the, you know, how big a part that is of that you're not just hearing the same thing,
and
that he created that, not to mention it's extremely instrumental in the creation of the Main Street Electrical Parade,
exactly.
which is the definitive Disney parade.
And he also was a major team member in the creation of Disney's precise, their fireworks, their airless launching, all that type stuff. I don't know exactly what his role was, but I know that he was instrumental in that type of nighttime
right.
Change coming to Disney's theme parks. So yeah, so I'd like to see him, and then can I mention one more just because I really like him?
All right, but give up the mic to someone else.
Okay, but I want Carlos Siqueiros to get a window on
Main
Street.
I was going to say that. You took mine.
Okay, well I'll let you say why.
Because he's like the best cast member ever. He
totally.
Not only did he work at Carnation for ever and a day, but as most people work at Carnation, have worked for Disney forever and a day. But he's always doing what he can to make Disneyland better through his little world of foods, and I wish Disney World had one of him
mm-hmm.
because he's not looking at a way to just create a new dish or make some more money. He's trying to bring the show to life through food, and I think if everybody had that attitude and you know, he lives the Disney life of just being that, and if everyone in the company had the connection to the base reasons Disneyland is there, as he did, the world would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And he is he's one of my heroes in terms of I aspire to be like him, but no, I'll never be able to achieve that. I mean, he is just a creative genius. He did the birthday things at Disneyland and just fought that through and did everything he could to make that happen. So, and not because it's the world's biggest deal, but because it lets people have a special day at Disneyland. And he's awesome.
That's what you just said is what I hear about Carlos. I don't know him nearly as well as you do, but not only is he extremely creative, but he also knows how to, I guess, play the game and actually make the stuff happen. And it's a rare person who can play both sides of that fence,
you know,
and stay at the company for a long time.
And Carlos is great at trying to find out what Disney's doing and get synergy to help. So, you know, if he needs something for Cinderella, you know, he has an idea and he knows Cinderella's coming out on DVD, he's able to partner with them to make it happen. If he knows Disney World has an idea, he's able to work with them and bring it here, Tokyo, what have you. His grasp of the company is such that he's able to utilize everything that's out there to make the dream a reality.
And he has this way of making anything seem possible. When you talk to him about his ideas, I've been able to talk to him sometimes when he's, you know, just about to launch something new. There's some new project that his team has put together, you know, and he's so excited about it. And I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking, this is crazy. But no, he gets it together and he gets the team excited. I remember when the new food offerings for the shack up at the Snow White Theater. What was that? Enchanted Treats.
Enchanted Cottage.
I think
Enchanted
it's called
Cottage.
Yums.
Way back when it was called Yums. But you went there and the cast was so excited because he doesn't work with the cast as much because he's, you know, in administration now, but he comes down and he talks and he gets involved and he gets down and dirty in a way, you know. It's so cool because then they get that fire that Carlos has because he's excited about it. He gets everybody passionate.
On that topic, remember when that opened, and what he did was he brought this – he recreated the story of Snow White for these people, the cast that was going to work at this location. And one of the cast members was telling me it was creepy because he's telling the story, and then he goes, and it's not just any apple. It's a magic wishing apple. And at that moment, everyone has that vision of Walt Disney mm-hmm. telling the story to the animators, and Carlos is able to do that, and that's a very rare treat.
It's so cool. I miss Carlos. I miss being able to grab some time with him when he had a new project that, you know, we could talk to him about for Laughing Place. And that is one of the sad things about living on the other coast. I do miss that energy and that excitement over food. It's just, I mean, you go to all this trouble to make this only so that somebody can just shove it in their mouth.
You say that as if it's not as important.
No, but it's weird because you don't, I mean, it's weird how so much of – I was more excited about The Enchanted Cottage than Snow White and Enchanting New Musical.
Really shocking.
To this day.
Shocking.
And, you know, I mean, one of the most exciting things is, you know, every once in a while I see Carlos walking around Walt Disney World. I'm like, oh, that's good. Because, you know, I know if this restructuring, you know, Disneyland's playing more of Walt Disney World, I'm like, yeah. I hope he's able to spread his pixie dust over here.
Now, real quick, Carlos is a good example, and, yes. you know, maybe one day he will reach that point. It's easy to look back and say who deserves a window given, you know, 50 years of a career or something. But looking now at some of the names that we know who work with the park and projecting forward maybe some decades, who do you think we might be remembering? Who do you think podcasters will be talking about in 20 or 30 years that are still working now? I'll say one name that came to my mind was Steve Davison when you mentioned Don Dorsey. And Steve Davison kind of took fireworks to the next level with, if you think about Remember and just how spectacular Disneyland and Disney World fireworks are now compared to Fantasy in the Sky. And that's Steve Davison in large part taking it from a you know, launch and go boom show to a true story with Believe There's Magic in the Stars back in 1995.
And Continuum of Entertainment.
Excuse me, back in 2000.
Yeah. 95, yeah, wow.
I think that was Fantasy in the Sky again. Keeping with entertainment, Denny Newell.
Oh, yeah. Denny Newell.
Tell us about Denny Newell, fanboy.
Denny Newell is able – he's able to take $10 and put together a fantastic character show in the Fantasyland Theater.
Yeah, and we're not being sarcastic. I mean,
no,
this
really
guy can create entertaining shows on what seem to be shoestring budgets like no one we've ever seen.
I mean, I remember right after 9/11, you know, they had to close a lot of entertainment, understandably. Mm-hmm. Understandably, yes. In the spirit of not keeping Fantasyland Theater dark, they opened Minnie's Christmas Party, which was a very small, you know, it didn't even take place in the main proscenium as it sort of, you know, jetted out.
It's basically a carnation show.
Right, basically.
They put up there.
But dang, was it fun.
It was so much fun.
And
arf, arf.
And we still talk about the show all the time.
Yes,
and
we do. Yes, we do.
And you know, you need money to do some things. It was still at the time when Disneyland Entertainment was taking itself a little too seriously and kind of forgot to be fun, and, you know, Snow White being an example. And it was great to see just something that, I mean, yeah, it's not fine art, but it was just a happy show at Disneyland, which is what people want.
Was he responsible for something like the 40 Years of Adventure, that little show over at Tomorrowland Terrace? Would that have been under his
review? I think he was still in entertainment at the time as a performer. Mm-hmm. But honestly, he's so under the radar.
I really don't.
Only reason I know is occasionally, you know, you see him at the rehearsal when you go see a show or like that, something like that. But I would love to know what he's been working on because they're so much fun and you never hear about him.
I associated him with the El Capitan little shows before the movie.
Ham's All Doll Review, would that have been Denny Newell?
Once again, I just don't know.
It's too small a show, but it seems like it's kind of a joke. It was fun.
But that's the name that has been associated with a lot of that stuff. And that's another hard part about this whole topic, is that Disney is not very upfront with, you know, kind of a cast or a team of who did what. They have people that they prefer to put out to the media when things happen, and that may or may not necessarily be the people who actually, you know, had the main role on it. And that's just probably the way it is with any large corporation. You have public faces versus, you know, those who do the work. So it makes it more difficult to know exactly who to credit with what elements of things. And I mean, we've been fortunate with Laughing Place to talk to some of the people, you know, and find out what kind of were their brainchild, and then, oh, okay, you can give them, you know, now we know who to associate it with. So, but that makes it difficult.
Now we're moving on to one of my favorite topics, which is best Disney song. Now, I know the song I have in mind is clearly the best song Disney's put out.
No.
Ever, but let's throw it to the captain to get this one started.
You know, the Sherman Brothers were mentioned earlier with the whole Main Street window thing, and I just have always been fond of Sherman Brothers music, or just most of the catchy stuff. I always find the catchy music, but one of my favorite songs was probably, it's tough, because I really like all the music in Mary Poppins, so I'd have to say Chim Chim Tree is probably one of my favorite songs.
Oscar-winning Chim Chim Tree, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm not, okay.
Chim Chimney.
Excellent choice. What about you, fanboy? What are some of your favorites?
Going with the Sherman Brothers thing, I love Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. I think that's a fantastic song.
Great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
I mean, just because that's what Disney's all about.
Let me interrupt you real quick for a second to read one of the messages we got from a reader named Lewis. You might be familiar.
Speaking of
He writes, as for best song I would select, It's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. My guess would be that the voters' age and when they started going to Disney parks might influence these decisions. Also, please say hi to Fanboy for me and ask him to send me an email if he ever gets a chance. So you might want to take care of that, Fanboy.
Okay. So. I will. I did.
Okay. This is an old one.
Yeah. It's...
Any others besides that one?
Modern Day, Love Be Our Guest.
That's a good one. That's
I like the Ashman Mencken stuff.
Rebecca.
I like Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride.
That is a fun song.
I think that's why I like it. I mean, Disney, it's the Sherman Brothers. I mean, it's hard to choose a favorite among the Sherman Brothers. It's just hard to choose a favorite Disney song. It really
so much
depends
variety.
On your mood.
Mm-hmm. There's so much variety. That,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, sometimes I'm in mood for the Mob Song.
Well, it's like there was a song, I mean, it's from Hercules, which I think is underrated when it comes to music.
Bless my soul, Hercules on a roll.
I was just thinking about that as we were writing this up. It didn't really get the full treatment musically
here.
Know.
If there's a prize for rotten judgment.
That is such a good song, and I had no idea until my sister sang it karaoke on the cruise. When we were on the cruise, my sister Rachel got up and sang, I Won't Say I'm in Love, and... Dude, she rocked it, first of all. And I had never really paid that much attention to the song, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then I started listening to it more often.
On the record, a failed Disney touring show, had a great little medley. It was that song, that's the name I'm forgetting. I Won't Say I'm in Love, and Let's Get Together, sort of intertwined.
Oh, wow.
It was really good, because those are two peppy songs.
Another listener, Mark, sent in some of his. Darby O'Gill and Little People's Pretty Irish Girl, which is an unusual choice.
Oh, she is my dear, my darling.
Yeah. Sung by Sean Connery.
Yeah, when you think good singer, you think.
Oh, that's a great little ditty. I find myself singing that in the middle of the afternoon sometimes.
Mark also said Feed the Birds from Mary Poppins, which is a beautiful choice. Maybe the best Disney ballad after Candle on the Water.
You know, I think of that song every time I turn a Disney World napkin over. And there's a big arrow through the bird and says, don't feed the birds. And I'm like, oh, don't feed the birds.
But the one that he sent in that was my favorite of his was Put That Thing Back Where It Came From or So Help Me from Monsters, Inc., which is
it's underrated.
So it's a funny song. It's got a good beat. You can dance to it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like
We did it on the cruise.
All the part of that play thing for the credits is all fun stuff.
I'm talking about the first two songs. He says that he finds them so infused with such passion and atmosphere that I feel like I'm being transported somewhere else whenever I hear them. A Disney song that does that for me is Little April Shower. As soon as that song comes on, it's like you can just picture the raindrops falling and the whole thing.
The wind when they go, ooh!
Yeah, it's so amazing.
Let's take a listen to another interesting one sent in by a reader. Or maybe a listener. I'm not sure how it works in a podcast.
Hey, Laughing Place. I just wanted to sound off about the best Disney song. I'm a big fan of the Sherman Brothers, as well as Alan Menken and Tim Rice and the late Howard Ashman. I think all of those guys do and have done just an amazing job. And there just isn't one song in particular that stands out from the others as the absolute best for me. I mean, for example, I love Jodie Benson's voice in The Little Mermaid. It was just incredible. And there are a number of other examples like that, which just make it too hard for me to choose. I will say, however, that the absolute best song you will hear at the Walt Disney World parks is Canada, You're a Lifetime Journey for the Traveler. That song is just absolutely magical, and it's an incredible experience to listen to it with the Circle Vision footage. And I know the movie is really outdated, but nevertheless, it's an absolutely wonderful song. And the only thing that rivals it in emotional impact for me is the song Two Brothers during the show at the American Adventure Pavilion in Epcot. And it's the song about the Civil War. Now that song and imagery are just so very moving, it really brings me to the point of tears. And I could watch that over and over and over again, and it just never gets old. So I hope that portion never gets cut from the show, because it would be a terrible, terrible mistake. Now, on a lighter note, and I realize this is a bit bizarre, but I think Pearl Ives singing the Ugly Bug Ball is just an absolute riot. And the song has such an innocent surface meaning, you know, about beauty being in the eye of the beholder. But, you know, if you think about it, there's something else going on, you know, under all that. And if you've never seen the movie Summer Magic, go rent it and watch it at least once, because irony is just handled so well in that movie. But most of the songs are not that great. Though, you know, a couple of them are, even if they have basically no purpose in advancing the plot. And they don't. They just come out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, what's this? And, you know, the main problem with it is you don't really understand why you should care about these characters. The plot is just so random. The story is obscure. And it doesn't help when you have your lead actress singing that someone's a not named gazelle with a voice like a bell, because that doesn't really win a lot of audience appeal. But hey, they did it anyway. Oh, hey, look, there's Burl now. Hey, Burl, what do you think about those guys at Laughing Place?
They're wonderful folks, even if they ain't got the rickets.
Well, thank you so much for that. We really
Thanks,
appreciate
Burl,
it.
Thanks, Burl, for telling
yeah,
us
Yeah, Burl, I didn't know he was a fan.
Yeah, me neither.
I didn't know he was still alive, actually.
Yeah, no.
I think he was one of those guys that was born old. Like Peter Graves. And
you
just
love Pink of Perfection.
I do.
I remember that from when we were
dating.
That
is your brand essence.
It is.
Femininity, is that from that movie?
Yes,
too?
It
oh,
is.
Femininity is one of my favorite Disney songs.
That is a fun song.
He did mention another one of my favorite, maybe my favorite theme park song he mentioned was Canada, which I saw you laughing when he said that. Canada,
I'm sorry, nope.
You realize it's English and French.
That's May we.
No, it's not mine. As far
that.
As when he talked about two brothers being very emotional for me, the We Go On from Illuminations, that Celebrate the Future medley there, that almost always makes me tear up.
Also, Tapestry of Nations.
That's a great
especially to, just
great
to hear
song.
The whole 4-day song. It's really it's
oh,
beautiful.
And all the research that went into that. Making it accurately.
Oh, that's one of my favorite LP memories, was finally digging up the lyrics for that song and learning that they weren't a foreign language. And then I got an email from this kindergarten teacher who wanted to teach her children about Africa, and she thought a good way to do that would be to teach them the Tapestry of Nations song, since it featured, you know, an African language. So I had to write her back and let her know that, no, it was just phonetic sounds, because they wanted it to be have a universal feel rather than a distinct nation attached to it.
Because you want to make it have a universal feel as opposed to a Disney feel.
Very
I like
funny.
The SeaWorld aspect.
You know another song that people forget to talk about is Razzle Dazzle Day from Pete's Dragon. That's a fun song.
It's a Razzle Dazzle Day.
Yep.
I hear it when you do the electrical parade.
And we all
bow, 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 bow.
Okay. I'm like, I don't even know that song. I haven't seen Pete's Dragon since I was like 6 years old.
I'm glad that they use that Razzle Dazzle for electrical parade instead of like Candle in the Water.
Candle in the Water. Is my favorite, absolute favorite Disney ballad.
Yeah.
And
it's not I'll try. A ballad. Isn't a ballad.
That's not called I'll Try. I'll Try.
Okay.
I guess it is. You know what?
Yeah,
right.
I'll
Good
Try
point.
Is a ballad.
Let me rephrase that. Candle in the Water is my absolute favorite classic Disney song.
Okay.
It's classic from the 1970s.
That counts.
You weren't born.
That counts.
But the best Disney song in history, without a doubt, From Return to Neverland, the song that I mentioned that started this whole thing about what's an actual good Disney song is I'll Try from Return to Neverland.
No.
All
no.
agree?
No.
All agree?
No.
All you listeners agree?
No.
Someone's
don't.
Waiting for You is better than that from Rescuers.
That's a good song, but it's not as good as I'll Try.
Or Tomorrow is Another Day from Rescuers.
I don't know that one.
I like that one, too.
You like
you
a
know,
lot of things involved
Disney,
with the Rescuers.
Disney, going on with Disney Records, my parents used to play the Cinderella album for me when I'd go to bed.
Night and Day
well,
with Cinderella.
Well, the second side starts with Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, as I recall, and I would always fall asleep in between the flipping the record over, so I didn't hear the second side of the album
well,
very often.
Let me tell you, at the end, she goes through this whole thing with the fairy godmother and a slipper and run, and but she wins.
Salad on noodles, ketchup on poodles.
So you must have been really confused when we watched Cinderella 2, because you missed the whole second half of how she got to that point.
The album, not the movie. I saw the movie. We're talking about the record, the little record that was pink with the picture of Cinderella.
Yes,
yeah,
it's when do you flip DVDs over to get to the other side?
You used to.
Not too long ago.
No, but see, not when Cinderella was around, see.
They didn't have DVDs
back then.
And then
I also like
exactly,
song.
See, so the Cinderella DVD, you don't flip over. That should be enough evidence.
I also like the song Showtime from the all-new Mickey Mouse Club of the 70s. I still have that LP.
I don't know that one. Can you
say
a few bars?
Showtime. That's all I know.
Yep, that would be it. Oh, no, you can hear it on Laughing Place Radio, though. I'll make sure it's hot for this week. So if people tune into Laughing Place Radio, they'll hear it this week.
You know what I love from the theme parks was the Downtown Disney song.
Oh.
The one that they played.
Downtown Spirit, come alive. Forget about that 9 to 5.
We went to the announcement of Downtown Disney at the Paradise Pier Hotel or whatever it was called back then. And they had this live
band,
like acapella type urban hip and happening band.
Big Conga,
66.
So yeah,
being in this original
drums.
Song. Downtown Disney. It was awesome.
And then they
fireworks.
Lit up fireworks that spelled out Downtown Disney, one of those little fire signs.
Song was never heard again in the history of mankind.
We figured we'd hear it all the time on the radio or whatever.
It was like, remember the Magic, that little song they did for the 25th anniversary?
Yeah, it just kind of disappeared, didn't it? Whatever happened to that song? Maybe it's time to remember.
Oh, wow.
The Magic.
What about the Daniel Powder song?
Because you had a bad day.
No. Not that one. Because that's what my Disney dream vacation is.
I hear that one a lot.
Didn't he was in that Disney movie that was so controversial, wasn't he?
No, Powder? That was the name of the film, Powder, silly.
He
wrote that song
in
the same way that Leanne Rimes recorded Remember When, and that one disappeared too.
But that was at least using a fireworks show. This one he did a live performance at Disney World. He did a live performance at Disneyland, and the song was never heard from again.
Actually, they did it in Disneyland Paris too for their 15th.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same guy?
Same guy. It was live, and they gave him a CD of it too.
Wow.
So it was heard again.
But because forever, whenever they would do a celebration, they would create a song. Remember the Magic, Share a Dream Come True, Celebrate the Future Hand in Hand.
And there was that one for Walt's birthday.
Yeah, Share a Dream Come True.
Oh, that was Share a Dream Come True? Okay.
Yeah, and so, and then, you know, then with the 50th, they kind of just put you in the fireworks show. Okay, now completely gone. I mean, it used to be like you would come to the park, and that would be the little song they play before they would open the park. And before the fireworks show, they would be like, yay, it's the year of a million dreams, woohoo.
But I don't even know what you are talking
about. You want to hear a bad Disney song? Have you seen the pre-parade for the Year of a Million Dreams at the Magic Kingdom?
No.
Dream on, dream of the memories, dream on and on, dream on and on, dream on, dream of the magic, dream on and on.
Let me guess, that's from Tokyo.
Oh, they do have highly repetitive songs.
They do have highly repetitive
songs. I think the goal is to say dream a million times.
And then we're done.
But instead, it became on.
What Disney song do you simply, like, leave the room or turn off the radio or whatever when it comes on? Is there one you cannot tolerate?
Anything from Mulan.
Really?
Whoa.
Let's get down to business.
Beef, pork, chicken.
Nope.
Yeah, for some reason, it doesn't really work for me at all.
That's shocking.
That's shocking, yeah.
I know. When she... loved me.
Oh.
Beautiful.
Oh, I'm with you there, fanboy.
You don't know what it's like to be a toy, apparently.
I am there with fanboy on that one. Well, Doobie, what's yours? Have you thought of a song that you can't stand?
Yeah, there's one that I so cannot stand. We're your friends.
Oh,
we're your friends.
We're your friends.
We're your friends.
He always, whenever that pops up on Laughing Place Radio, playlist. Edit it. He'll remove it or put it someplace else.
Yeah, you know we're listening to Laughing Place Radio ourselves when the songs, first of all good in a row because I'm selecting them. I'll Try always gets popped to the top of the list.
Yep.
And every now and then we'll just hit skip in the middle of a song because I'm not enjoying it.
you know why you don't like that song?
Why?
Because you really don't know what it's like to have friends.
Ouch.
I know what it's like to have our fiends.
Our fiends. That would have made the song better. We're our fiends. We're our fiends. We're our fiends till the bitter end. The bitter end.
Are our listeners in on the our fiends story?
We talked about it.
Okay. It has to do with a Disney Cruise Line experience. So, okay. Well, you'll have to find an archived edition if you missed that story.
I'll post it on the boards. Someone
and of course, I haven't mentioned Yo Ho, A Pirate's Life for Me yet.
Yo Ho, Yo Yo, A Pirate.
Not that version.
The Pointer Sisters. The Pointer Sisters version of that is awesome. All right, Rebecca, what song makes you go click?
Love is a song that never ends.
Oh, yeah.
One simple theme?
I think that's the word.
You never get that
far. We never get that far, no. Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
And I think it has more to do with the style in which it's recorded because it reflects the era. More than the actual song. It's just so grandiose and moves at a snail's pace. I never really liked. I always would turn it for that one.
Ugh.
I'd skip it, which was more difficult to do with my LP back in the day. Records going round and round. You have to leave, and if it scratched at all, oh, my parents. Oh, you're gonna scratch the record.
DJ Rebecca there.
Oh, man.
I'm just looking back through the last few songs LP Radio's played, and it did remind me to mention one thing before we move on. I think the best, I can't think of one song on there that I think of as woo, but just as a collection of songs, The Hunchback of Notre Dame is really something.
Notre Dame?
I'm sorry, I've been watching too much ESPN, too much Mike and Mike. They had
Brady Quinn on
this morning, whatever.
Because that makes you sound so intelligent. Isn't that what defines educated people and non-educated people? If they call Notre Dame, Notre Dame.
Then I did pronounce it the way I intended. So, anyway, just wanted to
see, I think you forgot to talk about the fact that Disney's had these mixed albums over the years. I mean, now it's really Disney mania with the pop stars singing Disney hits.
Mouse House Dance Mixes.
And then when I was growing up, they would reflect the era. So, like, when the exercise videos were really popular, they had Mousercise.
Come on, everybody.
They had Splash Dance.
What was the rap one called?
Mickey Unwrapped?
I think so, Unwrapped. And that one had what?
It had Tag Team on it.
Yeah. And then they had Rock Around the Mouse, and I bought that album at Disneyland during Blast to the Past.
Do they still play that at Mouse Gear at Epcot? Still?
Oh yeah,
that's where I always hear it. It's like I go into Epcot. It's like
they have that CD player's not opened in 10 years. Remember when Oh Brother Where Art Thou came and was released by Miramax, and they released Oh Mickey Where Art Thou?
Mm-hmm. That was a great album, people performing.
Those are the ones I really like. Are when they take famous people, and I don't mean Disney Mania famous people, and have them do Disney songs. My favorite is the Best of Country Sing the Best of Disney. The version of Baby Mine on there is just so. I don't even know who sings it.
You know what the worst celebrity Disney album is?
What?
Michael Crawford.
Oh.
A man should not be singing Reflection.
Who is that man I see? That's not the word.
And I remember how we all went off on the cover. Remember, it's that famous picture of Walt, and instead it's Michael Crawford.
Yeah, the one with the shadow and the shadow with...
That was a good idea. Let's not put Walt on the cover. Let's have it be Michael Crawford instead of Walt.
Condor Man does not Walt Disney make it.
I could just see Marty Sklar going... I knew Walt Disney. Walt Disney was a friend of mine. And you, sir, are no Walt Disney.
Oh, man. But there's another one of those, Simply Mad About the Mouse.
That one's really cool. That has LL Cool J doing Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf and En Vogue doing one song.
Yeah.
Neither of those is my normal style of music, but those make me happy.
Yeah.
Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf?
What was the one that was the first one CD? It wasn't released by Disney, but started this whole famous people doing it.
It has those long songs.
Stay Awake. Stay Awake, right.
Stay Awake, Buster Poindexter doing some scary thing.
Oh, that's a weird CD.
Sinead
O'Connor does Someday My Prince Will Come, I want to say.
Really badly.
Yeah.
With no hair.
Okay. Ima Sumac? Is that someone?
I don't remember everybody on that.
Oh, but they
album.
did, I think, of a version of... One song.
Okay.
And it was bad.
It takes a while to
Yeah, you gotta start with it. Because the only thing I can remember, it was on Delta Radio when I was flying back and forth between California and Florida, you know, eons ago. And you would listen to it, and you would have to, you're on the plane, and suddenly someone goes, woo! And you're like, ah! Bring back Little Orange Bird.
Was also on Delta Radio. That was the first place I ever heard that, the Little Orange Bird.
Stay Awake. Various interpretations of music from vintage Disney films going way back to 1990. And those are some weird songs on there.
And just so you know, all these songs that we've been talking about, you can hear them all on Laughing Place Radio.
Laughingplace.com/radio.
Shameless plug. Right there.
Yeah, Sinead O'Connor did Someday My Prince Will Come.
But we have several hundred albums that we rotate through on there. And it has a radio playlist style. So if you hear this song and then you hear that same song or a similar song within, you know, a period of time, it's like your radio station. That doesn't mean that that's the length of our playlist and we're playing the same, you know, 18 songs over and over again. We have a collection of several thousand songs from several hundred albums, all owned by Doobie, myself, or my brother. And we cycle through those based on theme or style of music.
Highly, highly technical algorithm, skillfully programmed by yours truly.
So yeah, we just try to provide a Disney soundtrack to your everyday life. That's what we do.
Do you have the Jar of Dirt remix on? You gotta we should have a petition to like have Disney put that on an album.
They should. I would love for them to put it on an album so I could play it, because we are bound by restrictions. RIAA, please don't raise your royalty rates. We like Laughing Place Radio.
Oh, I know.
Okay, Captain, it's your turn with some actual news.
Actual news? Wow. All right, it's time for some pirate news. I sense the excitement in the air.
I got a jar of dirt.
Yes. All right, this link has been making the rounds on many parts of the Caribbean message boards. I'm not even going to bother to describe what the website is. I'm going to post links after we record because these links are very hard to pronounce. This website has a little mini behind-the-scenes clip showing new footage and little behind-the-scenes interviews and stuff from At World's End. It was a Microsoft site. And so I shall be posting a link to that. You should definitely check it out if you're interested in At World's End.
And those links will be in the podcast section of the Laughing Place discussion board.
Yes, indeed. All right. GameSpot.com has an interview with Disney Interactive's Graham Hopper about the upcoming Pirates game and Disney Interactive as a whole.
Senior Vice President. Recently promoted. Mm-hmm. Graham Hopper.
Yep.
Senior Vice President of what?
Disney Interactive Studios.
Okay.
I'm going to read a little snippet of pirate information here from the interview. GameSpot asks, what about your licensed properties? You've got the game tie-in to the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie coming out soon. And Graham Hubbard replies with, yeah, so the reason why we've put so much effort into making Pirates of the Caribbean a great game is that we've seen this is not just any other game or any other movie. This is one of the biggest movie franchises out there, and it's our ambition to build it into a game franchise of equivalent stature. He goes on into talking about how they intend on doing the sort of Star Wars model, which was that they have sort of extended universe type games, meaning that they'll produce games whether or not there is a movie, just to sort of expand on the...
So we can look forward to a Lego Pirates of the Caribbean game.
That's a little bit different, but... Okay. You know. And on the subject of video games, we've got Legend of Jack Sparrow has become a PlayStation 2 greatest hit.
Mm-hmm. Means I can afford it now. Yay!
Greatest hit means discount bin?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Cool.
$19.99.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's just, rather than make it an own segment, the Captain's Challenge right here, let's right here and now, name another Disney-related PlayStation 2 greatest hit.
Kingdom Hearts.
That would be correct.
Oh, wow. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Other Disney titles include Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2.
Cool. All $19.99.
All right, and for the last bit of news, At World's End has a time, has a time calculation.
Now, before you break this, now we knew this was coming.
Yes.
And we don't know the number, yeah. But I want to know first, how long was Pirates 1 and Pirates 2?
Pirates 1 is around 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Okay.
And Dead Man's Chest was around 2.5.
And it seemed
this news is going to be, you know.
All right, break it.
This movie is 2 hours and 50 minutes.
That's 50?
Yeah.
Oh.
50. So before you see this movie, you may want to reconsider that large icy before going in there.
And that midnight show is killer.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there.
The El Capitan Theater is hosting a marathon.
Yes.
You can watch all 3 films.
All 3.
Can you imagine how long?
And at the same time, break the record for longest length of time staying awake.
Or not.
And they're gonna have, you know, break sessions and food and, I mean, everything. And costume contest. It's going to
They'll give you some time in between to do your Christmas shopping, because you won't have time after you get out.
Do you know how long the runtime is for Gone with the Wind or Ten Commandments?
Ten Commandments is, like, really, really long.
I think it's, like, 2 DVDs.
I knew that. No, because those films had those films, along with Gettysburg as well. They had an intermission. They actually have a break. They have a thing come on the screen that says intermission. They played, you know, beautiful music.
I wonder whatever happened.
I wonder whatever happened to that.
The last movie I saw with an intermission was Gandhi.
Oh.
Well, and it's interesting because you would think, you know, with these, the long movies have gotten longer as a trend. You know,
right.
Lord of the Rings and things. Yeah, and the movie theaters,
the extended version of Lord of the Rings, which is like 12 hours.
Yeah, like Pirates 2. And you would think
I've
that
got the statistics right
you
here,
think
man.
The movie theater would benefit from letting people buy stuff. Because, you know, in the middle of Pirates, you're ready to eat something.
Well, the one interesting thing about this is that because it is longer, it'll probably affect the box office quite substantially. For the weekend or with the total, because you can't have as many showings.
Although I think they'll just put in 18 million theaters.
Right. I think Spider-Man, it's right behind Spider-Man 3 for, like, the largest movie release ever.
It's a three-hour movie. This has to break the record for being in the most number of theaters at, like, AMC, I would think. I mean,
I would agree.
What do you figure? We should do, when we do our over-under for that, we need to do an over-under on the number of theaters it'll be in.
That's interesting to think about its revenue as well, because, I mean, you can't show it as many times in a given day if it's that long as well. So,
I just looked it up, and The Ten Commandments comes in at about 220 minutes, same for Gone with the Wind. Gettysburg at 261 minutes, so
this is the 170
epic,
minutes.
Epic, great films. Told their story. The Ten Commandments. The story of Exodus is told in less time than it's going to take to watch Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow. I just wish they'd have an intermission, because that just seems so old school.
Yeah.
Will there be a short up in front of it?
Oh, bump it up a little bit longer there.
Do you remember when Rescuers Down Under came out, and it was like the double feature, and they showed the Emperor's New Clothes, Mickey style, whatever. What was it called? It was a Mickey short, well, Mickey featurette, and then they had a little intermission, and they showed...
Are you talking about Prince and the Popper?
Yep, that one.
Okay.
I don't remember Mickey rocking around naked.
Okay. I was a little confused by the nakedness,
yes.
Too.
Okay. Prince and the Popper, and Mickey was royalty, that's all I remember. And then they showed Rescuers Down Under.
Yes.
And they would play Disney music as, like, I call it the Disney press event music because it's the music they play when someone walks up to a podium. And then they show... So, you know, there's something to be said. There's precedent.
I'm pulling for it. I'm rooting for that. I'm rooting for an intermission.
I know you're listening, Dick Cook.
It would be cool.
Yeah.
Because,
our friends at Disney, we're rooting for an intermission.
You got some trivia for us, Captain?
All right, I got a question for you listeners out there. Now, a lot of people, when they think of Disney child actor, they think of the name Moochie. So, who is the name of the actual actor portraying Moochie in so many different...
I know, but it's not my turn.
I know, too.
As I'm sure all of you are aware, Wednesday, April 18th, was the 61st birthday of Hayley Mills, one of the all-time Disney stars, and most known for her work as a child in such films as...
Pollyanna. Yep.
Parent Trap.
The Parent Trap.
Summer Magic.
And Summer Magic.
In Search of the Castaways.
And In Search of the Castaways.
Moon Spinners.
Good Morning, Miss Bliss.
Well, that wouldn't be child, but okay.
And, anyway.
In other words, you've only seen one of those movies.
No, I've seen...
Oh, That Darn Cat.
That Darn Cat.
We forgot to mention That Darn Cat.
Or TDC.
My family calls it TDC because they won't say that word.
Cat.
Bat. In any case, kind of thinking about some other famous Disney child stars. So we're going to talk about some of our favorites, and we're going to start with Rebecca, because when it comes to old Disney movies, she's the one.
Child actors, huh?
Yeah. You know, like Hayley
Lisa
Mills.
Lisa Welchel,
yeah, from the Mickey Mouse Club. And what was that other show she was on? Oh, Facts of Life.
Facts of Life, yeah, exactly.
You know, you take the good.
You take the bad.
You take them both.
What do you got?
The Facts of Life.
Yeah.
You know that
Kurt
song
Russell.
Written by Alan Thicke from Disney's Not Quite Human.
And The Thick of the Night. And, oh, Growing Pains.
I hear that one.
Alan Thicke was in Flight of the... Wait, what did you say? Flight of the Navigator?
No, Not Quite Human.
Not Quite Human.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
What about Not Quite Human 2?
Yes, he was still Not Quite Human. In...
Oh, he was the star?
No, he was...
He was the dad. He was the one who made the robot.
Didn't he get an android version
of
himself?
Yeah, it's still Not Quite Human.
Did the robot have a belly button?
Are you getting this confused with Kyle XY on ABC Family?
I think I might be. Anyway, Rebecca, you are going to...
Kurt Russell, child actor, Disney child actor, yeah.
What did he do?
Follow Me Boys would be when he was a child. But then I The one and only genuine original family band is another one that he has told
me. My absolute favorite films that I need to see.
It's great to see and Follow Me Boys because at the end you get to see him all grown up and he doesn't look anything like Kurt Russell.
Yeah, it's very funny. The actor who plays him grown up obviously does. You know, they should do that George Lucas thing and like put
him
get
in.
Kurt Russell to record
put
that
Hayden
now.
Put Hayden Christensen in it?
Yeah, exactly. Put Hayden Christensen in it. Yeah, that's it.
And Miracle. But,
I mean, my favorite though is Haley Mills. So it's hard to talk about anybody other than Haley Mills.
Speaking of Kurt Russell though, this week we were enjoying another of his films as a
Barefoot Executive.
Yeah, somewhat child actor. Barefoot Executive, which we still haven't need to finish. But
yeah, you haven't watched all of it yet.
That was a lot of fun. I'm a big fan of the monkey.
Yeah, the monkey's fun.
Not to be confused with Merlin Jones' monkey, or different monkey.
Yeah.
My memory of Kurt Russell was during that Donny Osmond Disneyland
lost.
Special, mm-hmm. Where he's lost and somehow ends up in a 15-minute promo for Haunted Mansion. Kurt Russell's at... I guess the Tomorrowland Terrace singing Sugar Sugar.
Yep.
And that was forever played at Space Mountain until the new Tomorrowland of 95 as you would come up the world's longest speed ramp.
That may have been the best single feature of the new Tomorrowland was getting rid of that.
Bum, 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 bum.
One of my recent favorites, which is weird because I don't think I've actually seen him do his child work, but I know he's a Disney child actor who's now a young actor who's done some Disney work, is... And I feel dumb.
Shia LaBeouf.
Thank you for helping me pronounce his last name. Shia LaBeouf, who was Even Stevens?
Yes, and you've not even seen
which
one
I've
of
not
them.
Even seen. But he grew up a little bit and did The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Which you really enjoyed.
Did you see Holes?
I didn't see Holes. That's one
that's
I need to see.
That's a good movie.
Because he was a child and it's a movie.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And because we're talking child actors.
Oh, okay.
And then, but Greatest Game Ever Played, he was great in. And then we just saw him last weekend in Disturbia, which is not exactly a Disney movie, but he was awesome.
Stupid DreamWorks.
I've decided that I'm a big Shia LaBeouf fan.
You know he's going to be in Transformers.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm excited about
that.
That
is so exciting. 747.
And Indiana Jones 4. I think he's doing something
oh,
for Steven
right.
Spielberg, because he's in like every DreamWorks movie now.
How about you, fanboy? Child actor, Disney.
Well, I have
style.
Two. They have something in common. One from the classic era.
Zach and Cody?
Yeah, they have the same father. One from the modern era and one from the classic era.
Mm-hmm.
From the classic era, Bobby Driscoll.
Okay.
And from the modern era, Orlando Brown.
I sense a theme.
Because they both overcame their addictions as Disney child stars and... Oh, wait, that didn't work out.
Successfully moved into the drug arena.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Orlando is saying that what was found in that car belonged to his friend and wasn't
That's
his.
That's what Michael Irvin said, too, and we're thieving
so,
right now.
So, you know, let's
Does anyone
just be
own their
fair
own
there.
Drugs? Or it's always...
Another one that came to mind just now was Jodie Foster, who she went on to have a decent career as an adult, I believe.
I think so.
Candleshoe, mm-hmm. Freaky Friday,
mm-hmm.
I think that's it.
Was Napoleon and Samantha a Disney film?
Yes.
Because I think that was her screen debut.
Okay.
That's the one where she's with Johnny Whitaker and a lion.
What's the one where she plays a little gangster?
That's Bugsy Malone.
Oh, I was going to say Silence of the Lambs.
No, that's Bugsy Malone. And I don't believe that was a Disney movie. What? No, I didn't see Silence of the Lambs, funny enough.
I think that would be funny.
She was in Touchstone's Flight Plan.
Mm-hmm.
She was.
Contact.
That was not one of her... A movie with Jodie Foster done by Disney on an airplane.
Should have meant hit for Doobie. Should mean that it's a film that's shown every day in the Mosley household.
And despite the fact I bought the DVD, it was bad. Captain, I know your family goes way back with the Disney classics and all those old Disney classic child actors. Who are some of your faves?
Well, here's the answer to the question, which leads up perfectly. Who was the boy behind Moochie, I guess you could say?
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Driscoll.
No.
Kevin Corcoran?
That is correct. And he would be one of my favorites just because Swiss Family Robinson was like one of my favorite movies as a kid. And he was just always fun to me. It's sort of fascinating. It's like he has this obsession with tigers and pits.
Hey, I have a child actor story I just realized. But go ahead. Keep talking. No, keep talking.
You say what you're saying.
I was at when we first moved to Florida. We lived in Celebration, and we were at they have this meeting on the first Thursday of the month for new residents where they tell you about what the town has to offer. Two of the restaurants bring food,
that's
so you can try
you
their
the,
food.
That's where they give you the pill.
Okay, very funny.
Yeah.
And that's you know you can try the food from the restaurants. Well, there's this gentleman there, and dude, he looks familiar. And I keep looking at him because I'm like, I know him, but I can't quite place why I know him. And I just keep, and then I realize I'm staring. You probably had this experience, and then you realize you're staring, and then you're embarrassed because you realize you're staring, and you hope he didn't realize you're staring. So I stop.
That's how we met.
So I stop looking at him, and I'm trying to figure out. Still, I can't quite place him. And I tell Doobie, I know that guy, and Doobie's no help, of course. So then the time comes, they're serving up the cake that they have at the end of the event. And I go up to pick up a piece of cake, and I'm not paying attention to who's serving the cake. And he says, the gentleman who serves me the cake, ends up being the same gentleman I had been trying to figure out earlier. And he offers me the cake. And in offering me the cake and asking if I needed another piece for my husband, I recognize his voice. And I literally went like this. Because I realized who he was. And his name is Ike. And he was the child star in the Witch Mountain films, mm-hmm. the boy, Tobin, right? Tobin was his name in the film. And it was one of those moments. It was funny. And I can't believe it was like a little squeak, and it was embarrassing. And so I just took my cake and ran away. And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that he lives in Celebration. I haven't seen him in a long time. I wonder if he still does, because it used to be that you could not, you know.
He was so involved in the community there.
Yeah, he was everywhere. We went to the Christmas thing they had, and he was driving the train, taking the kids around town. Mm-hmm. I see him at the bank all the time. I mean, he was everywhere. I haven't seen him in quite a while. So
yeah, I know Eyes and Ears did an interview with him shortly after we moved here. So they Disney knew he was here, but I don't know.
I know where
he
went to.
Where?
Witch Mountain.
Oh, that's right. It's time to go back.
I hope he went with Kim Richards. Is that her name?
Oh, that's right.
She's
yeah.
one of my favorite Disney
I bet
child
she
actors.
Is
there a boy alive who did not have a crush on Kim Richards? Or a boy around my age, I guess?
I don't know. I know a lot of the Disney fans I've met over the years have talked fondly of Kim Richards.
She did some $6 million Man, Bionic Woman stuff, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Yeah, she was like that girl who was in everything.
I think she's done an independent film recently based on the Witch Mountain spoof thing. I think she and Ike actually did that.
Oh,
I think
cool.
if you look her up in IMDb.
Yeah, the Blair Witch Mountain Project.
Yeah. So
clever.
I have no idea what it's like. I just remember when I was looking them up to see how to spell his name. I remember coming across that.
Such fun. I hope this tradition lives on. I think the big child actors recently that are at least getting attention are Hilary Duff and Lindsay Lohan, mm-hmm. who don't always get the best publicity. So maybe some of the others like Zach and Cody, Kyle Massey.
I'm interested to get
Miley Cyrus.
You know, Zach
Hilary's
and Cody's
novel.
Name is not... Actually, Zach
I know.
And Cody.
It's Zach and Cody
it's
Sweet.
Dylan,
I know.
Right?
I've seen it.
No, it's Dylan. Isn't it Dylan?
And Cole.
Dylan and Cole.
We've interviewed them for the website. I'm aware of Zach and Cody's name.
Really?
A red carpet. I didn't. But somebody
and
did.
They are?
Dylan and Cody.
No, Dylan and Cole. And that's really sad considering we just told you not 10 seconds ago.
Yes.
I remember there was a K sound.
There's a K.
And what character does Kyle Massey play?
Mr. Cooper? No.
In the house.
Hanging in the house with Cody and Corey in the house.
Yay!
Okay. And Raven played?
Miss Simone.
No, that's
Raven.
Yeah,
that
there we
the
go.
That's absolutely wrong thing
joke.
To say. Okay.
Joke.
You know, for it to people. Be funny, you have to get one right.
Touché.
Over the years, a lot of Disney child actors have gone on to have great success. I mean, we've talked about Jodie Foster. We talked about Kurt Russell. In recent history, they had maybe not in the same, you know, glamorous way, but Carrie Russell of the Mickey Mouse Club, she went on to have her own show with Felicity and then, right. you know, progressed from there.
Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera.
Mm-hmm. Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, they have a good record of spotting talent.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But that's funny when you're an adult, you go into the movie, then your career goes terribly wrong, then eventually you get picked up by Disney again.
Sounds like a Disney attraction.
Very good. Very
Whereas
good
with a child actor, they sort of start the career and they have a good career. When you're past the child actor, you always seem to go down the tubes and then go back up with Disney again.
That's what they're for.
So it's a trend.
But doesn't it sound like an attraction? You're going along, then something goes terribly wrong, and then
an
somebody
attraction.
Comes in and saves you. And
like every attraction.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, they... You know, most child actors were always there. You just never knew it.
Oh, aye. I can't believe you worked that in.
Podcast at laughingplace.com.
866-718-9408. And as Ryan Seacrest always points out on American Idol, it's an 866 number, not an 800 number.
Which brings us to the absolute best news of the week, which is...
Sanjaya is gone.
That's good news.
And thank you all for voting for John Ratzenberger on Dancing with the Stars.
Woohoo! Let's keep John around.
It's good to have a Disney person. I mean, I know he's missing all those Pixar softball games, but it's important to have someone represent.
Does that number spell out anything?
Vote for John.
I think it spells out 718-9408.
Okay. Yeah, if there's a zero in there, usually...
You're a lot. Yep. Unless you got a word with opera.
I was just going to say that, which is
shocking.
Disturbing.
PodcastLessons.com, 866-718-9408. Hope you enjoyed today's show. And before we close, I'm going to ask for a final word from the captain.
I got nothing.
Rebecca?
I went to the Magic Kingdom today. I had a really great time. On the way into the Magic Kingdom, there was two little girls on the ferry boat who were singing Chugga Chugga Choo Choo as the ferry would pull in. And they were very, very loud. And it was actually kind of getting on people's nerves. But the cast member, Richard, who was there at the front waiting to tie it to the dock and all whatnot, he started dancing to their little Chugga Chugga Choo Choo chants. And it made everybody laugh. And it really broke up what was kind of, you know, an awkward and annoying moment and turned it into something fun and memorable. Now you'll look back on that ride and remember funny Richard dancing as opposed to the annoying children.
You told me the story earlier. What is the Chugga Chugga Choo Choo song?
I think there's some character in children's entertainment that does it, but I don't know. Because I hear little kids do it all the time.
How's
they go, Chugga Chugga Choo Choo. Chugga Chugga Choo Choo.
It's from Chugga Chugga Chugga, DCA. Remember, caught on.
No. No. Nothing from DCA has made its way to Florida except for Soarin'.
I don't know. I've heard several kids do it, so I figured it was something from child's television. And since I don't have a child, I don't tend to watch, you know, preschool TV. It's Disney.
But, you know, Rebecca went to the Magic Kingdom, and all she brought me back was this lousy T-shirt.
It is pretty lousy, too.
Yes, it is.
Doesn't even have a pattern. Fanboy, what you got?
Okay. Last week, I mentioned that there's big fanboy news coming.
Oh, what's that?
And, well...
You can say
it. We'll get there.
Okay.
But I just need a comment on the Laughing Place Radio and Podcast Discussion Board. My dear friend, Magnet, who I've never met, but I'm sure you're a nice guy.
Or girl.
Or guy is in the broad, like...
Oh, pal.
Pro.
Perfect.
Yeah. Hey, Happy. says that... Wants to know what the big upcoming fanboy news was. And then this person says, perhaps there's a fan baby on the way. Now...
Somebody doesn't know fanboy.
Yeah, you don't know me. that's fine. Yeah, you probably don't want to. But...
I can vouch for that.
Anyway, moving on, my best friend just dissed me. First of all, I'm not a girl, so I'm not going to have a baby on my own.
Therefore, you're incapable of having a child?
Well, and yeah, I would have
to get a girl can't have a baby on her own either.
I would have to, I'd have to get a girl, and that would interfere. I'm already in love with, three people. Well, not people. I'm a big fan of Disney. But I'm not just Disney. I also like ABC and ESPN.
Yeah.
So, there's no fan baby on the way. I do take Happy on walks occasionally, which is about as, you know what you can do, Magnet, if you're listening? Tell my mom, because she really wants a fan baby, and... It's not going to be happening anytime this fiscal year.
Thank you for that. Before we go, I wanted to mention, give a recommendation for a new show that has caught on in our household, which is Thank God You're Here. I don't believe it's on ABC, but, you know, can't have everything. It's really funny. Yesterday's episode was with George Takei, who I didn't know he was funny.
George Takei, as he called it.
Well, I don't care what he calls himself. It's George Takei. George Takei. And I didn't know he was funny. But he was funny.
Yeah.
He
was, which is sad because they actually had comedians on there.
That weren't nearly as funny.
No.
So, highly recommend. Thank God You're Here. And until next week.
Thank God You're Here.